The country is in the grip of a water crisis, and that is making many people forget the dark days of load shedding. But how over is that really? I speak to energy expert Thomas Gardner. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks.
Let's start with Eskom's own medium-term adequacy report. It warns that load shedding could return in 2029. Why is that? And what needs to be done to prevent that?
Chris, yeah, that's an interesting one. It's actually great that Eskom is publishing the report and that it leads us to understanding the near future. So what has happened recently, as you know, load shedding has dissipated. It's given some reprieve to the public. And of course, as soon as that happens, then people think that the challenges are over. However, our challenges are systemic and it comes a long way. And it is also as a result of the monopolistic nature of the animal, of Eskom. So the 2029 challenge that we see is that some of the old coal-fired power stations need to be decommissioned. And three of them need to be decommissioned within the next 2 years. That's Camden, close to Ermelo, and then also Grootvlei out to the Heidelberg area. And then Andrina also in Mpumalanga. And these three power stations are contributing currently to the grid. They're probably part of the stations that's in cold reserve, and they need to be decommissioned. So we can't rely on them post-2029. And then on the other side of the coin, we are all really working hard to see our economy grow. And as when our economy starts to grow, we're going to see electricity demand increase. So if your demand increases, same time that your supply is dwindling, and for planned reasons, then you got this challenge of a supply-demand imbalance, which could lead to further load shedding.
So what are the best technologies to build new grid capacity as fast as possible?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's lots of talk about further coal or new coal stations, nuclear, some gas, and of course the technologies that we've seen being built in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years, wind and solar, and more recently, battery energy storage. Now, let's take them one by one. Coal-fired power, at this stage, I think for new power stations is a no-go. And the reason for that simply is as technology develops, the skills and the experience of people that have been in coal has now moved to new technologies. And that's not only in the operating and maintenance areas, that's in technology development itself and in construction and actually manufacturing those spares for coal-fired power stations. So the supply of that is starting to dwindle, and that will result in more expensive coal-fired power stations. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we also have the challenges that we've seen when Medupi and Kusile was built, that those power stations took more than 10 years, I would say 15 years, to actually build. Massive impact on interest during construction or the way you fund them. And then the massive challenges in actually commissioning them and getting them to supply electricity reliably. So coal-fired power, in my view, is a challenge. And the reason for that is 2029 is around the corner. And with power stations taking 15 years to build, that's actually not something we should consider. Then we can go to nuclear. Nuclear, also interesting. We've seen Canada commissioning a nuclear power station recently under budget and in schedule, within the planned schedule, which is an amazing feat in itself, because those type of projects are not happening every day. But nuclear I think it's got the challenge of long lead times as well. Typically 15 to 20 years from inception to commissioning. And we've seen that globally. The other challenge I see with nuclear in South Africa is that at this stage, we've got two sites identified. The one is close to Coburg on the west coast, and the other one is at Tasmont in the Eastern Cape. Now, on those two sites, let's say we do pull the trigger and we build those two power stations. Each of them will be able to supply around 1.8 gigawatts of capacity. Now, that leads us to 3.6 gigawatts over 20 years. Maybe if we're lucky, 15 years. Now, there's not many other sites at this stage identified. So how many more of those can we build? If we go full out and we build those two, we only add 3.6 gigawatts in a time span of 15 to 20 years. Let's move to some other technologies. We've got gas, and gas to power is I think, a good opportunity. The challenges that we see in South Africa is we actually don't have real local supply of gas. The Panda and Temane gas fields in central Mozambique off the coast is running out. And Sasol is using that gas for their own facilities, making fuels and plastics and those type of products, fertilizer. And then some of that gas is also used in the industrial gas industry in South Africa, heating and steam and things like that. So gas supply is a problem, and to actually build gas infrastructure, either Richards Bay, Durban, Kuga, or Cape Town, or let's say even Saldanha, there's many studies that needs to be done, permits that needs to happen, and then you need to build it, and then you actually overbuild your capacity. Because you need to supply electricity on the one hand, and then you can, on the back of that, and which is a good thing, also supply the industrial gas users with additional gas. However, we've seen some challenges recently in the Richards Bay environment, where the environmental impact assessment permit was waived by the DFFE after some objections from interested and affected parties, and that means the homework wasn't done well. And let me tell you, for wind and solar in South Africa to do the impact assessments and get your environmental approvals is a massive task. So I think from a timeline point of view, we've run out of time for gas as well, if you look at 2029. I do think Eskom and other gas developers must push hard and see if they can get some gas power stations built, and that is to assist us in the grid with the variable supply of renewables, and that brings us to renewables. That's the wind and the solar that we've seen. And to give you an idea, in the last 4 years in South Africa, we've seen probably 6 to 8 gigawatts of behind the meter solar being built. That's on the rooftops, small pieces of land. People that supplying themselves, businesses that supplying themselves. So if you compare that to, let's say, 3.6 gigawatt of nuclear that we can build in 15 to 20 years, that's what the private sector have built without any, let's say, massive challenges around timelines. So the technologies that can assist us is wind and solar, and of course battery energy storage. And battery energy storage, I think we should really look at, because a part of our problem in the country is grid challenges. We don't have enough grid capacity, and a way to increase grid capacity or the utilization of grid capacity is to put batteries at certain grid points, which then allows us to generate with renewables when there is a resource like wind and sun, but evacuate electricity from those batteries when there isn't resource, and that then increases the utilization of the grid.
Do you think that Eskom is making adding new capacity difficult in some ways?
I think definitely. And in some way, some ways, not by being difficult or obstructive. I mean, it is a complex issue to make sure that grid capacity allocation is transparent. So there needs to be certain rules followed. These rules have developed recently after massive congestion around grid capacity over the last 5 to 8 years. But on the other hand, I do think the monopolistic behavior is also playing a role. And I can say they like in any business, I mean, private business is like that as well. There's different factions within Eskom. There are the faction that wants to see privatization, a market, and full unbundling. And then there's a faction that doesn't want to see it and wants to see the monopoly stay intact as it has been for the last 100 years. So it depends who's the management, and it depends who's allowed to have the loudest voice.
This is where the unthinkable happened. They just came here and took his car.
No. I sold it to them. What's this?
It's crime scene tape. Did they pay you at least?
Within 15 minutes, money was in my account.
Were you happy with the number they brought you?
I got almost the same price as what I paid for the car. Everything was easy, everything was painless.
Well, there you have it, South Africa. With We Buy Cars, you won't come short. How tall are you really?
1.93.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
How many kilometers of new transmission line is needed to enable all the new renewable capacity to be added? And how many did Eskom build last year?
Okay, so, I mean, if you look at the transmission development plan, and I must say the National Transmission Company of South Africa has done excellent work in developing the most recent transmission development plan. And they treated the private sector like partners and like customers. So you could see that change in attitude from a monopolistic type of behavior to a customer-focused behavior. And in that TDP, they looked at the plans in detail, and it was about 14,400 kilometers, 14,400, that needs to be built in the next 10 years, starting in 2025. And then also a massive amount of transmission substations, switchgear, as well as many other, let's say, parts that needs to be maintained. Of that 14,400, I think in the previous year, 2024, there was about 14 or maybe 45 or maybe 60 kilometers built. It's hard to say exactly how much. In 2025, I don't have the numbers at hand, but I would suggest something like 400 to 500 kilometers. It could be less, it could be more, but I know of specific projects that has been launched and that is in the process of being built. But I think the good thing is that the National Transmission Company, and they've got different ways of building grid. Let me just step back before I answer that. They've got few build models. The one is that they build it themselves. So they've got the teams and the equipment, the skills and the experience, and they actually internalize that and they build it themselves. That's the one model. They also then went out to an EPC model, engineering procurement construction model, where they actually appoint EPC contractors to build grid on their behalf. I will get back to that in terms of volumes. And then the third model that they are busy with is then the Independent Transmission Program, or the ITP, where they will then appoint through the IPP office private sector players that will build, own, operate, and maintain those assets, like almost like toll roads, over a period of 20 to 25 years. And then that will be handed back to the National Transmission Company after that. So there's the three models there. On the second model, so the answer that I gave around the amount of kilometers that's been built was on the first model. On the second model, they have in the last year appointed between five and six EPC contractors to build around 1,740 kilometers of transmission lines, and that's 400 kV and 765 kV lines. And that should be built within the next 2 years. So you can see the ramp up in build happening. All those contractors are appointed. They are, some of them already on site, some of them already busy with civil and earthworks. And the manufacturing of the steel structures is happening mainly in South Africa. For that 1,740 kilometers of lines, we need around 85,000 tons of steel structures, and much of those tonnages can be built in South Africa. We've got a capacity of around 50 to 55,000 tons per annum. So that would need to be ramped up. But you can see the action in the field at the moment.
In his speech, the State of the Nation address, President Cyril Ramaphosa said that the National Transmission Company will be independent. That's contrary to what Eskom and the Minister of Electricity had wanted.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, Chris. And I can just say Eskom came out of an extremely difficult period, let's say from 2008 up to 2024, where it was really challenged, if you read Andre de Ruyter's book, challenged by criminal cartels, mafias around coal supply and around spares and whatever else. I mean, theft and corruption became the order of the day there. But I do think under Dr. Nyati and then Murakani, you can see a massive improvement since they taken the helm there. Now, the advantage of what we've seen is a boldened Eskom, where the old Eskom of pre-2008, you can see it being resurrected. And that is good for the country because we don't have load shedding. We've seen an increase in maintenance and plant maintenance. The electricity availability factor is reaching the 70s as they want it. And we even have some 6 to 7 gigawatts of capacity in cold storage. So there's lots of positives in Eskom. You can also see the diesel usage coming down massively. So all good from that point of view. The challenge of that is that a bold Eskom would say, but listen, we have proven that our model works. And if we manage it well, we want to continue to manage it well. And I think that's where the Eskom management asked or influenced the minister to say, let's just keep going with this and let's see how long we can manage as Eskom and protect Eskom. And that's the other challenge we've got, is that the Eskom board needs to look after the Eskom as an entity, and they don't necessarily look after the country. So there's some challenges, and the unbundling needs to happen in full so that those board members are separate boards and the National Transmission Company can look after the transmission company while the Eskom Generation Board can look after generation. And being said that, we also need to unbundle the distribution part of Eskom out of the current massive Eskom. So that's the only way it needs to be done. And I think what happened in the with the minister and the current management is that they said, let's move the system operator out as a separate entity. And it manages the system, but let's keep the transmission assets within Eskom. And that challenge, in my view, is, and they've got their reasons. I mean, some of them are good reasons. In my view, it is just a way to keep control and to be obstructive in the reform process to see how long you can get Eskom in its current form to survive. And that's not good for the country.
Now, meanwhile, electricity tariffs are heading for the roof. What can be done to stop this relentless increase? When will we ever have affordable electricity again?
Chris, yeah, I think it's such a complex issue. And it's not only an Eskom issue. We also have got 253 odd dysfunctional municipalities in the country, each of them being a distributor of electricity. And if you really want to go and see dysfunctional distributors, go into rural South Africa and start with Johannesburg. I mean, what absolute nightmare is City Power and any other distributors in the country can't or haven't maintained their grids. The challenges of supplying electricity to end users have been increasing. I'm sitting at the moment in Silverton Dale in Pretoria, close to East Lynn, and our generators are running because for the last 2 weeks we haven't had electricity. A week before that, we haven't had electricity. In December, we've been out for 2 weeks. And that's a Tshwane municipal distribution problem. So what happens now is there's a compounded challenge at Eskom around costs. And then there's an issue at the distributors around volume and cost. And let's be honest, the municipalities are not paying Eskom. So what are they doing? They are getting the revenue from the sales of electricity. They're cross-subsidizing everything that they have to, and which is part of the model. But in my view, they also abuse and misuse that money for paying the caders and doing whatever they do of that. And that money is then not paid to Eskom. So the municipal challenge is massive. So in excess of 100 billion owed to Eskom is a problem. And that's also why the Eskom distribution unbundling isn't happening faster. But let's get back to Eskom. I mean, Eskom is crying foul. And Eskom is saying, listen, our tariffs are not cost reflective. And we need to increase our tariffs to become cost reflective. And that is fair. And we need to have cost-reflective tariffs. The challenge that I've got with that is that they also then obstructive in reforming the industry and keeping competition out. They are making decisions like trying to spend another 90 billion rand, 80 or 90 billion rand on Camden, Grootvlei, and Hendrina to extend the life of those coal-fired power stations. And just if you look at that calculation, it would further increase tariffs. So on the one hand, they are saying we need increases in tariffs, but the electricity cost is too high. And on the other hand, they're making investment choices that doesn't make sense. So and that, in my view, is driven by this. Absolute monopolistic model of let's control the whole supply chain.
Thank you. That was energy expert Thomas Garner. Speaking to BizNews, I'm Christine. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.